I'm your host, Annie Bowles, and this is News du Jour. Welcome to News du Jour. You may be wondering, why am I, Annie Bowles, here hosting this podcast? I usually start by telling people I'm a political baby. You see, my parents met working on Capitol Hill. By the time I was two, I had been in my first political commercial and even got lost crawling around the West Wing. Don't worry, Al Gore found me. My family then moved abroad when I was nine, and I attended an international school in Brussels with kids from all over the world. And it is this type of global perspective that I also bring to our show. I graduated from American University in DC after studying political science and art history, as well as interning on both sides of Capitol Hill. I even interned down the hall from where my parents met. I'm now pursuing a professional certificate in journalism at NYU in conjunction with Rolling Stone magazine. I guess I was always that friend in the group who cared deeply about not just what was going on politically, but also globally. I often kept my own friends informed through high school and into young adulthood, so I guess I've always done a version of this show. I'm genuinely passionate about following the news, and I'm here to break it down for you guys every weekday. We always strive to be a calmer space to get your news, or as one listener put it, like getting your news from a well-informed bestie. I'm so glad you're here. Hey everyone, and welcome back to the News du Jour. Before we jump into today's episode, I wanted to give you guys a little update on the bill we're tracking, Senate Bill 1470 here in Oklahoma. So long story short, if you guys remember, the last update was that we had passed the Senate. So now our bill will go over to the House side, and it has the same hurdles to jump in the House that it had in the Senate. So we basically have House committee and then House vote. And committee is always what I am more anxious about because that's where they essentially kick the tires of a piece of legislation. They, you know, think through any possible ramifications, ask questions, tweak language, and that is where our bill has been gutted before. And so, long story short, it is a nerve-wracking experience for, you know, us as part of the team that is putting forth this legislation. But assuming that goes smoothly, then it will move to the House floor for a vote. Well, it'll be voted on there. And assuming that vote goes our way, the final hurdle to jump will be getting Governor Stitt's signature on our piece of legislation. From there, you know, it would become a law in November the 1st. And after that, all of the attorneys would begin work to free, you know, these women who are already being affected by criminalized survivorship. So there's a lot still to do, and we're going to be tracking it every step of the way. I'm hoping that in the next couple days here, we will get a date on the calendar to know when the House committee is going to be reviewing our bill. And as soon as we have a date that we're able to tell you guys, we will let you know. That will be the next thing to look out for. If you're wanting to take some action, either sign the petition that's linked in our show notes or send it to somebody else to sign. Also, on OK Survivor Justice on Instagram, we have a ton more calls to action and are posting about this type of stuff every single day. So definitely head over there to follow along with this journey and answer calls to actions as well. So for the news today, we have three stories for you guys. First up, a UN ceasefire plan that has a lot of ripple effects, and we will get into all of them. This will be a longer story. We also have two updates when it comes to Trump's court cases. He had two hearings yesterday in New York, so we will update you on both of those. And then we're going to cover a mass shooting in Russia that just feels a little murky, and we'll get into why. Let's jump in. So you guys, international relations, they are a delicate dance, and sometimes moves that seem innocuous from the outside have the potential to set into motion vast ripple effects that can be felt around the world. Yesterday, the United States made the seemingly small move of abstaining from a vote at the UN. But we all knew that this would cause the motion for a ceasefire to advance, to pass. And that simple move of abstaining caused Israel to actually cancel their delegates' plan to come to DC to build a strategy around Rafah, etc. The UN resolution called for a ceasefire for the month of Ramadan without any preconditions, such as the release of hostages. And while we're on the subject, for the record, I have seen influencers online suggesting that the release of hostages is by definition part of a ceasefire, and that is absolutely untrue. Hamas will probably not release these hostages unless it is specifically negotiated as part of a deal. You have to keep in mind who we're dealing with when it comes to Hamas. They do not play by the rules, and the hostages are their only bargaining chip at the moment as their backs are up against a corner. Ceasefire does not necessarily equal release of hostages, and that's why it has to be specified. They're not part and parcel. Hamas could very well keep the hostages after Israel's offensive is over. That is, if there's any Hamas left after Netanyahu is done. So why did the United States make this move at this time? Well, as we have been reporting, tensions are high right now between President Biden and the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu. And Netanyahu has been making statements that would suggest that they plan to invade Rafah no matter what the U.S. says or does. And that's because they feel it's the only way to truly defeat Hamas, as the remaining Hamas militants are likely hiding out amongst so many civilians there in Rafah. But the U.S. has said in multiple formats and venues that invasion of Rafah would almost certainly violate many of the rules that we have around funding foreign offensives. Basically, we don't see a way to make an invasion of Rafah work from a logistical or a human rights standpoint, and that doing so could cost Israel U.S. support. So as of the time I'm recording this, I'm not sure what this will mean long term for U.S.-Israeli diplomatic relations, but the moment is definitely feeling very biblical with the prediction that Israel will stand alone and whatnot. Even some of the foes that Israel was supposedly going to face in the Bible. Anyway, it is very strange, but regardless, it seems like Democrats here in the U.S. will continue to call for elections in Israel to replace Netanyahu and refuse to participate in an invasion of Rafah so long as 1.5 million civilians are sheltering there, desperately in need of basic life-sustaining supplies. We will definitely keep you guys posted on this. And with that, we will head over to New York to cover Trump's court cases. So there were two major hearings in two different Trump cases in New York just yesterday. And it was a mixed bag for the former president. One went Trump's way and the other did not. Let's get into the details. So in the first hearing to play out yesterday, Trump gets a little help with his bond. If you guys remember, he owed about $500 million in bond for his civil fraud case in New York. He had to either pay that amount in full if he was going to appeal his case or start to pay interest on that giant sum. But his attorneys were pleading with the court, saying that he simply was not able to find an institution willing to work with him on such a high amount. So instead, the court ruled yesterday that Trump simply needs to find $175 million rather than the $485 million in order to secure that bond and not have to pay interest. It seems like a good compromise on the one hand, but on the other, it's still a lot of money, and Trump may still be in need of a partner to help him achieve that sum in cash. We'll wait and see, and we'll definitely keep you guys posted. During Trump's second hearing yesterday, the judge decided that the DA going up against Trump had made good faith efforts to provide the documents in a timely fashion and that Trump's team had had enough time to review them. So the judge ruled against Trump in this case and decided that the trial would proceed as scheduled beginning on April the 15th. As a reminder, this is the case to do with Trump allegedly paying hush money to former porn star Stormy Daniels in order to conceal their sexual relationship that he had while married to Melania. And speaking of Stormy Daniels, she actually just came out with a documentary or maybe even a short series on Peacock where she's finally telling her own story. I am definitely planning to watch this for you guys and I will report back if it's worth seeing. And that brings us to our final story for the day, a mass shooting in Russia that feels a little murky. So there was a mass shooting in Russia's capital city of Moscow, and it has been a tad confusing, to say the least. So let's go over first what we know and then what's been a little murky. So we know that over 45 people were wounded in this incident, including at least 5 children, and more than 60 people were killed, according to the AP. Based on video footage that NPR reviewed, there were believed to be 4 to 5 different attackers who used both bullets and sort of handmade bombs against the crowd. This was certainly a pre-planned, pre-coordinated event. Lastly, this group did set the building on fire. Here are the pieces of information, though, that are getting a little bit convoluted. So, an Islamic State group immediately claimed accountability for this attack. But why a Russian concert hall? It seems a little random given that they typically hit religious sites abroad. So this was a bit strange, but U.S. intelligence actually did back up this claim. But Russian officials, on the other hand, were quick to place blame on Ukraine for the attack, even though there doesn't seem to be a lot of backup for that claim. However, when the assailants were brought into court, according to experts for NPR, the suspects were badly beaten, you guys. One was barely conscious. Another was missing part of his ear. They were bruised, things like that. And it definitely seemed that the tactics used to extract confessions from these men may not have been above board. We all know in this day and age that false confessions are a very real and somewhat common thing. So hopefully these men are the real perpetrators and not another round of victims in this tragedy. Our heart goes out to anyone affected by this attack. And for today, that is the news du jour. Today, I wanted to leave you guys with the quote, "Confidence is quiet, insecurities are loud." If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on whatever podcast platform you use to listen. A rate and review on that platform or a shout out on social media would mean the world to us and help us to be able to keep creating the news du jour and reach more people who need a calmer space to consume the news. But the best way to support all of our work is to become a patron at www.patreon.com/sugarfreemedia, and that is also linked in our show notes. You can follow us on social media at newsdujour.podcast on both Instagram and TikTok. You can follow my personal account at It's Annie Bowles on both platforms as well. Any little noises you may hear in the background are my rescue pup. He has a little separation anxiety and always records with me. We appreciate you listening and look forward to telling you about the news again next time on News du Jour.
Broadcasting from